Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight grew up on the east side of Detroit, caddied at the Country Club of Detroit, and worked at an auto dealership, being paid 50 cents a week to keep the coal furnace stoked. He's had breakfast with Pope John Paul the Great, lunch with President Jerry Ford, and dinner with Bob Hope and Sinatra. At one point, he owned 24 auto dealerships. His name? Hoot. Martin Hoot McInerney. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible with Jack Rasula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're with Hoot McInerney. Hoot, welcome. It's an honor to have you.
Thank you, Jack. It's an honor to be here.
Can you start by talking about your childhood and your parents?
Well, my best recollection as a young man or young boy goes back in the 30s. I recall people used to walk down the street with a megaphone singing songs in a tin cup, or people on little skate scooters with no legs begging for food, and on the Chalmers bus going with my mother somewhere, and a woman nursing her baby on the bus. Some of the thoughts that I'll think back now that people forget about. And one time I entered the door, and someone was at the door with crutches on and no legs. And I, for the life of me, I was always scared of crippled people. I used to run in the closet. I used to hide. They used to scare me. And that's one of the things I recollect. The other thing is going to church with my mother. And they had a big pulpit. They used to wheel out in the church, and the wheels were squeaky. And at gospel time, the priest would get up after the gospel and give a sermon. And he used to, it was the old brimstone and hollering and screaming, not screaming, I should say, but talking loud. And I thought, why is he mad? Why is he hollering at us? Remember some of the things that maybe some of the Catholics won't like, as the priests don't like. It was the truth. It used to scare me when I used to go to Mass. And on Good Friday, I couldn't play with my wagon. And on Sundays, you couldn't play. You had to stay home because a day you're supposed to be, it was a religious day. You're not supposed to play around. You should be mild and meek and go in the afternoon, go to church.
What did your dad do?
My dad repaired street cars for the DSR. He did it for 25 years, retired when he was 49. Then he went up and worked at St. Servite High, took care of the boilers and the gymnasium and most of the kids up there. I had a dealership on the east side over on Mount Clemens on 16 Mile of Gratiot, and they used to walk in and say, is this the same Mr. belonged to Mr. Mack? He used to be at Servite High. My son told me, he said, they know your dad more than they know you. So he's quite well, he was well known. They used to dedicate the yearbook to him on their high school yearbooks. They'd always have a big picture of my dad in there.
What were the first jobs you had as a kid?
Mr. Millenbach was a dealer that was from Gratiot and Russell. He had a big store downtown and seven or eight floors with ramps, and he used to park his cars up on top. I'm told that his father was there in a meat rendering business, an old German family, a big family. And Henry Ford gave him his first of the franchise. He was 21 years old and had Gratiot and Russell. He expanded now, believe it or not, to the east side, the up-and-coming east side at Warren and Dickerson. He's going to put up a dealership. And I lived on a half block down the street, and I'm up there playing on the wall. And he came by in a green Lincoln Zephyr and a cigar and coming out of his mouth. And he walked up. He said, hey, kid, you better get out there before you break your neck. That's why my first encounter with him. But lo and behold, when the place was built, they gave me a job filling a stoker twice a weekend, and I got 50 cents for that. And I hung around there and kept baseball scores. The biggest accessory sold at that time was a radio. They have a little dial up on a triangle a board and a battery behind it. And you used to have the baseball scores on there with Ty Tyson at that time, with the announcer for the Tigers. And I used to keep score and go after get pop for him. And at that time, there was no smoking in the shop. We sold Ford Benzel gas. We sold Ford fertilizer. We were open 7 days a week for fuel because we sold gasoline. But it was a Ford dealership that sold Ford and Lincoln Zephyrs at that time. And, of course, in 1939, the Mercury came out, and which is another model. But I hung around there, and they gave me Mr. Milbach. He thought I was Scotch or something to that effect. But Hoot Gibson was a known cowboy at that time, and I was a junior. People used to call me Junior. He said, that's a sissy name. So they gave me the nickname Hoot. And they bought me a uniform and put my name on it. And lo and behold, little did I know, that would be my occupation for the rest of my life.
You went to the Marines?
Right. Went after high school and got out, got in the reserve. Didn't, the most I ever saw of the Japanese was a picture in the movies. I didn't do any fighting. I took the place of a fighting man. But anyway, the war was officially declared over in July or June 1946 or something. But we were told at that time, if you went before that, you were considered a World War II veteran. And we had to be in the reserve, so... 4 years later did I realize I'd be called back in for the Korean War in September 1950, and then served another year of that, and I was well-trained and everything, but never did get to Korea.
You were a parts manager for Ford at a Ford dealership?
Right, and a service manager and a bump shop manager and a used car manager. And at one time, we had the biggest used car lot in Raleigh in the United States. We used to sell 400 to 500 cars a month. We had two or three buyers on the road, about 40 salesmen. Prep shop, body shop, trim shop, paint shop, and the whole bit, Livernois and Grand River. But I didn't start it, nor did the dealer I worked for, Mr. Dawson. It was started by a fellow by the name of Bert Baker, who used to advertise on the streetcars, you got $5, I got a car. And it was written up in Life magazine in 1953 as the world's largest used car lot.
Everybody's searching for self-confidence today. Where did you get the self-confidence to say, I can do this, I can do this, I can do this?
Being poor. I like to eat. I think that's the best thing I can think of. I enjoyed eating. But the thing of it is, anyone who was born at that time, you know, people don't realize, but the average white American draftee, and I'm saying that because I don't think they drafted blacks at that time, was like 5'7", 120 pounds. You know why? The food in the during the Depression at that time, the times that they were brought up, no one had the right food. They didn't eat the right food and didn't have vitamin pills and so on and so forth. But the was 5'7" and 130 pounds. No, we didn't have a fat community. We were poor, and most of the people, they did their shopping at little Italian stores, Belgium stores, little ethnic stores, and they gave you credit. And till 1939-40, then along came the supermarkets. But up to that point, most of your communities in Detroit and the suburbs, if there was no suburbs, maybe in small towns, everything was on credit. They come in there in a little loose leaf book with their initial on it, with M, pick it up, and if you bought 48 cents, they wrote 48 cents behind your name and carried it all out to the end. And on Friday, your father gave them $5 or $6 to pay off the credit that the food you ate during the week. And
We're talking to Hoot McInerney, and when we come back, we'll ask him how he got his first dealership. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
This is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR with Jack Krasula.
We're talking to Hoot McInerney. Hoot, how did you get your first dealership?
Well, I'll tell you what. At the time, I tried to get a dealership in Detroit, and they offered me dealerships outside Detroit. And I said, I know everybody here. I don't want to go to Indianapolis. They had a couple of them in Rochester, New York. One in Rochester, New York. But I wanted to stay here. And the big three at that time, General Motors, it's just impossible to get a GM franchise. They had such a long waiting line, and Ford was the other one. And Ford had a long list of people that they had that were waiting in line to get them, more deserving, and that lineup long before me. So Chrysler came by one afternoon, or called me up to the dealer to talk to me, because they're having their problems. In 1960, they almost went under. They turned around and asked the come over to talk to me, and they said that would I be interested in taking a Chrysler dealership, and. The terms on it, I would stay there for a year, and if I hit such and such a number, they'd give me a $50,000 tax-free bonus. So I thought of it, and the people I was working for, I was general manager of a dealership, and talked to the owners, and they were good to me. They said, look, if that's how we got where we did, you know, taking a chance of opening up something. So I left them, and I opened it up, and I hit my numbers. And isn't it funny, after you hit that number and people know what you're doing, all of a sudden all the barriers are down. Everybody wanted to give me a dealership. So Ford turned around, and we're going to buy up the people that I had worked for.
From that dealership in 62, you ultimately built it to 24 dealerships.
Mm-hmm.
How has the business changed over those 43 years?
Jack, I'd have to have your show go on for 3 years to tell you. It's just, well, the change is so fast anymore. You know, here we're looking at headlines in the paper, General Motors going bankrupt and in tough times, Ford upside down and so on and so forth. And here we have a Japanese company, Toyota, being going to be the largest corporation in the world, and how times have changed. They lost World War II, and all of a sudden, some of the largest companies are Japanese and Germans. You wonder who won the war. Anyway, what we got on right now is at that time they were it was hard to imagine that times could change that fast, and it has changed today. For me to go out and get dealerships after the first one, I did a good job that year. Then they offered me other ones, the manufacturers did. And I was fortunate to have family, namely my brother Jack, who watched everything in Detroit. And I went on the road and started buying dealerships.
You've hired and employed thousands of salespeople through the years. What makes a great salesperson?
He has to sell himself first and the product next. I think that's the big thing. And the other thing is, a person is liked by everybody. People like him, generally like him. If you've got a dour face and you walk up and you don't show no interest when you're waiting on a customer, all of a sudden you can have the best product in the world, but he's not going to buy it off of you because you weren't open with them or frank with them. They got to like you. You know, you took interest in them and you were able to generate that enthusiasm about the product. You have to get that across first. People buy you first, then they buy the car.
Are salespeople born, or can you become a great salesperson?
Well, I'll tell you, Jack. One time, Joe Schmidt was out. We were watching some training at Brother Rice, and Belfar's son was running with a football. And Joe Schmidt said something. He said, you know what? People, you can't teach that to anybody. You're born with that intuition of running open field and so on and so forth. And I think that's the same way with a salesman. You're born to be a salesman. You can't teach somebody that.
You have tremendous love for peoplehood. You've never met a stranger. Can somebody learn that?
I don't know. You got like, I guess, my weapon is my mouth. That's how I made my living, is selling. I can't pound a nail straight. I can't sing a song. I'm not a good dancer. I mean, how do I have to make a living? Is selling with communicating with people.
If you looked up in Webster's dictionary the word networker, there may well be a picture of yourself. You know everybody. How did that happen?
I like to meet people and find out what they do. I'm interested in how they got where they did, what they did, and so on and so forth. I guess I'm just being open with them and carrying on a conversation. I met more people. I'd say the biggest thing in my life was golf. I'm not a good golfer, but golf. I met more people in golf than anywhere of all the people I've ever met was through golf. Believe it or not.
You're also a great storyteller. I don't know if they're all true, but a great storyteller. How'd you learn to tell stories?
Well, I'm Irish. Got full of blarney. That comes natural.
When we come back, we'll ask Coot about some of these people that he's spent time with. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Now back to Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back. We're with Hoot McInerney, who's had breakfast with Pope John Paul the Great, Hoot, what was that like?
Well, it wasn't a sit-down breakfast. Cardinal Schacha invited a few people over to his house on a Saturday morning, and we gathered in just off the dining room, and Pope came downstairs, and he was in great shape. I mean, he was really athletic looking, and you know, steel, beautiful, good, pretty eyes. And we got in a circle, and he came around and talked to each one of us, and he wouldn't leave till you stopped talking. And I reminded him that we sold him a white Lincoln, and he sold it. And they got a picture of him and I with my mouth open laughing, and my wife was with me. And anyway, Tom Monahan was there, I think, and brother, former pastor Monsignor Hickey of St. Mary's of Redford Parish. Anyway, there was about eight people the Cardinal chose to meet with him, and we had coffee afterwards. And when he was through, he said, well, he waved to us and walked upstairs. But as far as one-on-one, you could talk to him about anything you want to talk to him about. And they had a Vatican photographer who took the pictures, and I got three of them. Normally, you just see, I met him in Rome, and you have a picture taken with him in the Andy room off his office, and where you're very serious and he's serious and you're shaking hands. That's the picture that everybody gets when they go to Rome. But the one I had with him, he's laughing and I'm laughing because, you know, what'd you sell the car for? There's White Lincoln for it, whatever it might be. But I had the opportunity of being in Rome and going down in the garage and seeing the first car that the American people bought him, a Graham Page, a 29 Graham Page, and some old Mercedes and so on, and a lot of Pope mobiles that he had downstairs. So we went in his garage and so on. But anyway, he was a very interesting man, and when he walked out of the room, I think the now Pope was present because he was a cardinal with about 20 bishops, and Monsignor Tony and I were waiting to have our picture taken and shake hands with the Pope again. And I know the cardinal was there, who's now Pope Benedict XIII. He was in the room at that time.
Who's the smartest man you've ever been around?
I think the most interesting man that you'd pay to hang around is Billy Eichhorn. He had a sharp mind, bright. I'll tell you what, when he went to Washington, they were afraid to mess with him because they didn't want to take him on. He's a congressman, when he was down for the Chrysler loan. And I know Lee had a lot of smart marketing ideas, and a good outlook on a lot of things. He made a good president. Actually, Mondale was going to be his running mate. Instead of that, he got this girl out of New York or New Jersey had a problem with her husband being a slum landlord or something. But at that time, they inquired to have me ask him if he could run, if he could back as a second banana behind Mondale, and he said he would. So he would have ran with, if he had ran with Mondale, Mondale would have been president rather than this woman he chose.
Who's the funniest man you've ever been around, Hoot?
Gosh, I don't know. Mickey Rooney was funny. I played golf with him. I can't think of some of the comedians I've been with who were funny, and a lot of, there's a broker, a car broker by the name of Ben Fader, who could have been a stand-up comedian that years ago, but I ran into a lot of people that could have been great stand-up comedians that weren't entertainers.
So, we're talking to Hoot McInerney. When we come back, we'll ask him what kind of car he's driving today. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Once again, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
We're with Hoot McInerney. Hoot, what are you driving these days?
2005 Lincoln, and whatever I get off the used car lot, some car that's coming in on a lease turn-in. I never drive a new car. I guess, I don't know, I never got used to it. I was brought into the automobile business through the used cars because at the time, new car dealers were new car dealers. They usually used a new car for the trade-in because there's more money selling used cars than new cars. Because everyone knows the price of a new car, but no one knows the price of a used car. and you can make a lot, you make a bigger markup on a when you go to sell a used car than a new car. Not only that, that used car is unique. If it's a nice car, and it's a certain model, a certain year, no one else has got another one like it. If someone's not looking for that car, so I'll have the best looking 2002 Lincoln or 2002 Mercury or 2002 Chrysler than anyone around. So consequently, I can get a good price for it. Now, if you go in and look at a current model, 2006, it's the same car in every showroom in the United States for the 3,000 years that sell it. So it's something unique, and you can make money on it.
You've played golf courses all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
If you could play one course one time, what would it be?
The one that I played the best on. That'd be hard to find. I can't remember that. I played all over. I played some of the worst golf in the world on the best golf courses. Let's put it that way.
So you've played with actors, business people, politicians, astronauts. Are they all the same on the golf course?
Yeah. The first man on the moon, Neil Armstrong, you could see he was an engineer. He'd really weigh something out to how he's going to do it. That was in a bogey buster tournament. I played with President Ford. I played with President Bush, Sr. And I played with the head of the CIA one time. And I used to play down in Maryland at Burning Tree. And that was a men's-only golf club, and most of your congressmen and government people and high jobs are all members there. And I met a lot of them through a friend of mine by the name of Cy Lauder, who was a member there. And JP and I played just about everywhere. I was at Muirfield. I was one of the first members that met Muirfield and played down there in some pro-ams. But then I was there for about 24 or 25 years, and I quit.
You're the founder of the St. Joseph Mercy Men of Mercy. Mm-hmm. You're the founder of the J.P. McCarthy Foundation. You're the founder of the Millie Schembechler Memorial Golf Benefit. You're a leader within Old Newsboys Goodfellows Fund, the Pell Police Athletic League, Focus Hope, Rose Hill, Children's Hospital of Michigan, Special Olympics, etc., etc. You're always giving back. Hoot, why?
I hate to tell you this, Jack, but my friends have got me involved in it. My good friends have, where I couldn't say no to them. Believe me, I didn't just sit down and open my pocketbook. They had to turn around and open my pocket first. No, the causes were good, and you used to tell yourself, how did I get in this mess anyway? You know, right now, like Angel's Place has got something coming up, and if you start to read about that, that's a great organization. But what people forget sometimes, you make a donation, and all of a sudden it's an annuity. You know, someone will say, I got it. Would you help this charity? And I had one fellow that told me one time I helped him out. Then I called him up. I said, would you help me out? He said, hoot, I have my own charities. And that sort of made me mad. But people forget. They think that they see where you gave something to somebody, and all of a sudden you're on their hit list, and you got to say no to somebody and stop, you know, what you're giving. Not that it's not the right thing to do, but after a while, it gets tiring that people are always pulling on you for money and so on and so forth. And what they forget, there's nobody in a 100% tax bracket. They say you can write it off. Well, I didn't know where you could write off 100%, you know. And they sort of forget that. And there isn't any cause that isn't good. It's just like right now in Detroit here, we're getting hurt from the money that was given down to these hurricane survivors. And that was good, but now I guess some of the funds up here, the Goodfellows, United Foundation, and so forth, are having a hard time.
Many people who become successful forget where they came from and who helped them get there. You haven't done that at all. What's been the key to remember where you came from and who helped you?
I don't know. I guess I'm a sentimentalist, or I think of, hey, I'll tell you one time, over at Chandler Park, you got a nickel for chasing balls, baseballs. They had a league over there on Sunday at 1 o'clock, and if you the umpire would hire you for a nickel chasing foul balls, and how much a nickel was at that time. I think the big thing is we lost the value of what a nickel buys today and what a nickel bought years ago. We lost the value of a dollar and what it'll do. And I keep on thinking that if we think we're somebody by giving someone $10 or $15, that doesn't buy nothing today. That where years ago it was something, you know. It's just, well, it's the same way with churches, you know. People are mad when the minister, the priest, the rabbi, they're always asking for money. But I like what one pastor told me. He said, you know what, people forget. When I leave here, this edifice belongs to them, not me. And people forget them. They're given to the church or whatever church it might be, or synagogue or Muslim temple. That's for them. That minister or priest, whoever it might be, he's not taking it home with them. He's leaving it there for them.
Time after time, you're listening to JR, you're watching the TV, you read the newspaper, and you learn of somebody who's had a tragedy. House burns, whatever, whatever. And you put some cash in an envelope and go to somebody and say, give it to them. You do that so many times, why, Hoot?
Jack, I don't I don't like to talk when I do so. I do it, and I have my own system how I do it. And I don't want to say how I do it, but I have a way of... I might stop the car, Jack, and go by St. Mary's, old St. Mary's, and see these guys wrapped up in a blanket, and tell the guy, stop the car, walk out, and put $100 bills in the blanket. So, but some days I do it, some days I don't. But it all depends, I guess. You know, when you look at it, it's a cold day out, and they're wrapped in a blanket, you feel sorry for them, and you do it. Now, somebody will say, you know what, he's going to go out and buy a bottle of whiskey. Who gives a damn? You know, he might buy something to eat.
You're 76 years old.
You're not supposed to say
and
that.
When you're in town, you go to work every day.
Yeah.
Why?
Because I like it. I'll tell you what. It's costly. I've got five grandchildren and five children, and they all work for me. And I've got some are in school yet. But anyway, I can't believe I'm that old. I'll be honest with you. I don't feel that way. You know what? I'll be 77 in January. And I can't believe that I'm going to be 77. I feel like it's somebody else.
I've heard you talk about the fact that attitudes are more important than facts. Can you teach somebody that, or is that something you just believe?
Well, right now, a good example, the facts and the attitude. What does it bring on? You've got newspapers today and TVs. All they're talking about is GM's going broke, this one's going broke. The real estate market's this, and they're not selling, and so on and so forth. Southeastern Michigan, Northern Ohio is going to be bad and all that. It's not the end of the world. Heck, I remember 1958, we had a slogan around here, we ought to buy now. Governor Romney was out there, and they were making a pitch, and the newspapers were saying, how can we help you, and the TV stations, radio stations. In their case, I said, you ought to help us. You put us in this position, because that's all you talked about was bad times. And again, they accentuate the negative. Even today, they do that.
We're talking to Hoot McInerney, and I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back. We're talking to Martin McInerney, known to everybody simply as Hoot. Hoot, you go to Mass every morning. What role has faith played in your life?
Well, I got to be honest with you. I often thought, how I started that, I said, you know, if I could sell a car there, I'd stop. And that was one of my reasons. I'll be honest with you, Jack. I said, you know what, isn't that a shame? He said, if someone they were passing out $50 bills, you'd be in there every morning. But I go to church because I'm a sinner. There's no good people in churches. There's only sinners. Churches were made for sinners. And I think the big thing is, I guess I got in the habit of that in the service. And afterwards, I kept on doing it. And then sometimes it'd fall by the wayside for 2 or 3 months and pick it up again. But, Jack, I'll tell you what, I couldn't pose for holy pictures. I'm not a good Catholic.
You're known as Hoot, not Saint Hoot.
That's right. You hit it right on the head.
I remember listening to J.R., I don't know how many years ago, and the former governor of Kentucky had just died, Wallace Wilkerson. And I think it was Paul W. Smith called you. You had lost a lot of money to that man, millions. And all you said was, my mom taught me only say good about others, and I said a prayer this morning for his soul. you don't seem to be bitter about the times that you were got the short end of the deal. What? How have you come to be like that, Hoot?
I knew the man, and he got a lot of people. I mean, I was for the amount of money I lost you know, some millions, but I had some friends of mine lost $100 million, $85 million, and names if I mentioned you would know they were nationally known names that he took. But I think his whole deal was he was hoping for an IPO to pay us back, and it didn't go. He wasn't a flamboyant, or I know he didn't take it out and spend it on himself. But there's all kinds of stories. But the man was gone, and so be it. I still have a few dollars left.
Are America's days, the greatest days, ahead of us or behind us?
I don't know. We could say that by trying to be the policeman of the world, it was the downfall of the Roman Empire, and it was a downfall for the British too. But are we going to become another France and Italy, just be another country? Or do we turn around and attach on to Canada and Mexico, and we'd have the natural resources of Canada, the wherewithal, the money, and the technology of the United States, the workforce of the Mexican people? And then I would invoke, this time this is a dream thing, I would invoke the Monroe Doctrine. No one can come in and no one can come out. The heck with the rest of the world. I'm tired of us losing young people every 10 years or whatever it might be. We're having different wars. Two things you're never going to stamp out, poverty and monarchies or dictatorships. People, for some reason, a lot of people weren't made for democracy. And a lot of people are happy doing what they're doing. We keep on going in there, and we're going to show them our way. And is our way, you know, the right way? In order for democracy to work, you have to have an educated society. And these people aren't ready for it. And we go in there, and they seem to fade. That's what's happened in Africa. You know, unfortunately, the people, you know, the Europeans were in there, and they didn't teach them too much. And they turned around and gave it to different people in these countries, and they weren't educated or ready for democracy. And it's a shame. That's my opinion now. But I'm saying, unfortunately, some of the richest areas of the country with natural resources, and they're poor. They got oil, they got gold, they got everything else, and it just seems doesn't seem to go. And they invariably end up in dictatorships.
Speaking of losing young people, this state, the brain drain in this state is phenomenal. What do we have to do, Hoot, to turn that around so that these kids stay after college?
A big thing, though, a lot of people, like, I'll give you an example, Colorado. Colorado attracted a lot of young people because just the ecology, the lifestyle that they liked it better. They'll work for less money for an environment that they seem to like, the mountains, the clean air, or whatever it might be. And or maybe that could be a lot of baloney, too. Who knows? Anyway, what they're doing in Colorado right now, they're building from mountain to mountain in every valley because that's getting to be a populous state. I don't know. I'll tell you what. We still have the best universities in the world. We have the best universities here in the state of Michigan. And you know what? I guess what it is, just like what a lot of people used to say, I was in Hawaii for 25 years. I was all over Florida. I had dealerships down there for 25 years. Why did you come? Why won't you move down there and stay there? Because it's not home. It's real simple. We are all, you know, tied to where we were born. And that's why I never left. A lot of people that are that way.
You started with nothing, and you really made something of yourself. What advice would you give to young people today?
I don't know, believe in yourself. You know, Jack, I got to tell you something. All these things work if you got good health. You know, if I didn't have the health, if I didn't have people help me, I didn't do it myself. I had a lot of good people. I had people that worked with me. And I owned a place, but they worked with me. They were friends. For some people, I've just passed on. One of mine was Joe O'Malley. Anyway, I was never their boss, and they just... I could depend on them. I could walk away from the police. They'd run it the way I want it to be run. And I have no regrets in what I've done. And I've had a good life. There's a lot of opportunity out there. This country's a great country. We always have someone step in the breach and gets things done, whether it's a Patton or a Reagan wherever it might be, we always seem to have being lucky to have a leader, whether it's in Congress or in the military or be in an executive office in the presidency or in government. Look what Bill Gates has done as individuals. And look at the jobs he's created, or the Henry Fords and all the rest. You're always going to have them. Remember one thing. They didn't come from wealthy families, you know. It's just the opportunity they found it here. And it's the sad part of it is the ones that are born here are the ones that can't see the opportunity. The ones that see the opportunity, unfortunately, are immigrants that come here. And they saw, my gosh, look what's out here. It's so great. And they take advantage of it, our young people don't.
What are your dreams going forward, Hoot?
I just hope that I got a pacemaker and a defibrillator. I hope I go quick. I don't want to be in some nursing home with drool coming out of my mouth, rocking in the front porch someplace, waving at the cars going by.
Just give us 5 minutes notice, Lord. Right?
That's all I want.
What are you the proudest of in your life, Hoot?
My family, my brothers, my sisters, and how things turned out for all of us.
A lot of people today, middle-class people, who have been making a good living as auto manufacturers in these plants, are very fearful of the future. What do you say to them? How do they keep hope?
Yeah, we'll find something else. You know, there's always going to be something else for us to do. You know, the thing of it is, whoever thought some of the things what we're eating, what we're wearing, you know, look at today, but cell telephones. They put them, you know, I'd like to be an installer. I was used to ride these Michigan Bell trucks. They got good wages and so on and so forth. They're not around anymore. You know, I think telephones are about the best thing of all. People aren't going to have no one to wire their houses anymore. We don't have to worry about storms because the lines are down or whatever it might be. But who thought of that 25, 30 years ago, that a cell telephone would do what it's doing? And look how many people these companies have replaced, the installers, the linemen, and everything else. But you walk into a Verizon telephone store, there's 15 people working in there, and there's people in the back repairing these telephones. You know, there's always going to be somebody. Nothing is going to last forever.
You've sold hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of cars. What's the best model that you have ever sold? Not the most, but the best.
The one that I made the most money on. I also have the greatest car in the world.
So, a lot of people today have lost hope, have lost dreams. How do they get hope back? How do they get dreams again?
They used to take the salesman down here to Ford Auditorium or something, and we'd have all our fellows down, and they wear different cardigans and so on and so forth, and the automobile companies would have a stage show and the whole bit, and some kind of a song that was popular. They run it up to with their own lyrics in it. You'd go down there, and you could walk out of there all pepped up. It's like a Bo Schembler could give him a speech. You know, we all need that. We all need someone to the halftime speech or the rally down to the automobile shows that they used to give us about you're marching out of there after looking at the cars and the whole bit. All of a sudden, you can walk through walls. It's like no different than get down to Paris Island once and play the Marine Corps band. You can walk through a wall. I mean, there's anybody's going to stop you. It's just that they can make you. Get in such an atmosphere that you, nothing could stop you. That you can do what you can do what you believe, and you can start to dream that you can do these things, and by God, you can do them.
Hoot, thanks for coming on. Thanks for all you've done for so many people that had no idea you did it. Our guest next Sunday will be the editor and associate publisher of Crane's Communication, Mary Kramer. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because anything is possible. Slow.